Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Ballistic Podcast, live from San Jose, California. I'm your co-host, Guru Ram Prakash, and Skyping me all the way from Monterey, California, is Vikram Kanth, my other co-host. Vikram, how's this week been for you?
Dude, it's been pretty busy. I will say, all the way from Monterey is a little, maybe a little misleading because it's only about an hour away, but even still. It's still far enough.
It's still far enough. I still have to Skype you. It'd be funny if you were actually in San Jose and we were just Skyping each other. But we have done long distance podcasts. Like, for example, I was in India at some point in time, and you guys were in the States, and we did a international version of the podcast. You also did the Denver one. So we have done long distance podcasts, and they've gone pretty well. So with that, we want to be talking about this upcoming episode. But first of all, I want to remind our listeners to subscribe to our podcast. We're on Apple Podcasts and Google Play, especially our new listeners out there who enjoy the podcast and enjoy the content. You want to receive an update whenever we release a new podcast. So please do subscribe to our podcast again on Apple Podcasts and Google Play. And we're posting episodes every week, Vikram, and the listeners are getting some fresh new content.
Yeah, man, I'm super excited for how we've been able to do this so effectively in terms of making it so that we have content every week. We actually put out episodes. Our listeners get that, give us feedback. That's what we want from everybody. And as we always do, if you guys have feedback, leave us comments. Please send us notes, whatever you want. We will read them and we will respond.
Yeah, because, I mean, even though I've been doing this podcast for a year now, I've rarely received feedback from our podcast. So it's hard to know whether you're doing things right when you're not receiving feedback. And I mean, the feedback that I've received so far when I've asked is mostly positive. People seem to like the content that we put out there. But in any way, if we can make the listening experience more pleasurable for you, please do let us know. Vikram, you got anything to add to that?
No, I think that's good, man.
All right, man. So let's jump right in. But again, first, I want to talk about a new source of NBA content, theballers.com. That is theballrs.com. We got fans just like you putting out articles every week, and they do a great job. Fans are doing, what they want and what they want to write, really. It's good to see. We got like guys varying from high school age to college age to I guess working age like myself writing for theballers.com. I haven't written anything. I mostly use this podcast as my contribution to the website. But yeah, if you want a new source for fresh NBA content, go to theballers.com. Again, that is theballrs.com. And now that we got that out of the way, we can go over the topics that we're going to discuss on the podcast today. So we want to talk about the Celtics and Sixers game from this week. It's particularly interesting because Kyrie Irving did not play in that game, and the Celtics managed to win, so we will talk about that. We'll talk about Magic Johnson tampering and why he seems to not realize that he still works for an NBA franchise and cannot really talk with players. And also we want to go into the All-Star stuff, give us some basic predictions on the various events that are happening on All-Star weekend. And we want to talk about the buyout situations for these players. Where are these players that have been waived or bought out going to sign and in effect going to affect the playoff races for most of the teams that are vying for their services? But the very first thing that we want to talk about is news that just broke this morning. Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN has reported that Dell Demps, the general manager of the New Orleans Pelicans, has been fired. And the timing of the move is really surprising to me. I think we all expected at some point that the Pelicans would go back and reevaluate the general manager position. But obviously not this soon. And according to Woj, the ownership was livid with an injured Anthony Davis leaving the arena during Thursday night's game. And that Thursday night game was a win over the Oklahoma City Thunder at home. And Gail Benson, the owner of the Pelicans, is telling associates that she wants to overhaul the Pelicans and search for a GM to take command of the Davis trade talks and reshaping of the team's future. So obviously, that pretty much means that the new GM will basically get all autonomy over player operations, which is, I guess, a good thing. But Vikram, why don't you start off talking about Del Demme's tenure with the Pelicans, and now that he's gone, what does it mean for the future of the Pelicans?
So I think Del Demps' tenure will be marked by the fact that they were unable to keep Anthony Davis. Frankly, besides drafting him, I think pretty much all of their personnel decisions were mistakes. Although they made a couple, good pickups. I think the trade for Jrue Holiday, while somewhat short-sighted, resulted in having a really good player. So I don't blame them too much for that. The other move that I really liked that they had was trading for Nikola Mirotic. Although again, it continued a trend for the Pelicans of leveraging their draft picks every single year. And it's really hard to put teams together if you don't have cost-controlled contracts around your star players. And when you only have one star, that becomes especially important. And then finally, I thought the Boogie trade was a trade that they had to make, and it was bad fortune that, you know, he tore his Achilles. So, I mean, in that sense, I do have a little bit of sympathy for the franchise. But they mismanaged Anthony Davis's career, and as a result, he asked for a trade. So I think that's the biggest legacy. The other thing is, I think he mightily mismanaged the Lakers trade situation, and I think that that's going to hurt them come the summer, especially looking at, and of course, again, our news ties together, but especially looking at the Celtics and what they look like without Kyrie Irving and what Kyrie wants to do. The idea being, if Boston doesn't offer Tatum in a trade, I think the Lakers package is probably the best package they can get. Outside of somebody offering them, you know, the number one pick in Zion Williamson, which I doubt is going to happen. So again, you know, we really don't know, but I don't think that Del Demps did the organization justice in terms of getting them, you know, in the best position to succeed. And so his tenure, I think, will be regarded, rightly so, in my opinion, as a failure.
And Del Demps was the GM for the Pelicans for a long time. He was there back in the day when they were trying to trade Chris Paul. And obviously now they're in a very, very similar situation trying to trade Anthony Davis. So obviously Del Demps tried to make do with the draft picks they had and tried to surround Anthony Davis with talent. And obviously he fell short of those expectations. And he got fired today. I want to talk about the Lakers trade for a second, because that was something that was mismanaged. And I understand the Celtics fans coming out and saying that Jason Tatum would be the best player in trade talks, and I 100% agree with that. However, I mean, also not only given the scenario that Vikram is given, if Danny Ainge ever wanted to play hardball and not give up Jason Tatum, even if Kyrie was staying, and gave up Jaylen Brown instead as the head of any trade discussion that the Celtics had with the Pelicans, that's not a good trade for the Pelicans. And, I mean, if you look at the Lakers' offer, all of a sudden that offer starts to look better. So for Del Demps to not even pick up the phone and negotiate with the Lakers during the trade deadline period is a mistake in and of itself. And also to think that Danny Ainge has your back is a huge mistake, especially when you start thinking that I'm part of this NBA general manager fraternity. Everyone's got everyone's back. I got news for you. No, they don't. They got their own teams back, and they want what's best for their team. And as a general manager, you should want what's best for your team. Vikram?
This is another one of those. Apparently, Del Demps hasn't been studying what's been happening in the NBA for literally the entirety of Danny Ainge's general managing career, where he's taken advantage of every team and made trades that are disadvantageous for every other organization. I don't think he's ever lost a trade, frankly. I can't think of one off the top of my head.
And that's a credit to him.
And yeah, I think Danny Ainge played this perfectly. I mean, he's in the driver's seat right now. But what I am saying is the New Orleans Pelicans made a dumb mistake, because they trusted Danny Ainge over the organization that's literally giving you every single possible asset that they had at their disposal. And now you somehow think you're going to get a better offer for Anthony Davis. I don't know. Maybe it's short-sighted of me. Maybe they get Jason Tatum and we're both wrong here, Guru, but I just think that that's so unlikely, especially if Kyrie ends up leaving.
I mean, there is a risk factor here. I mean, it's not written in stone that Jason Tatum is going to the Pelicans, and that Danny Ainge is just going to give him up in the trade talks and have him be the head of the trade discussions. But I wanted to talk about the Pelicans' future for a second here. Obviously, they have to deal with trading Anthony Davis and Danny Ferry, who has been a consultant with the Pelicans organization for some time, has been hired as the interim GM. And obviously, he will be tasked with bringing the organization forward. But if you're the owner of the Pelicans, what are you looking for in a future GM?
I would say somebody with a proven record of building teams from the ground up, you know, like a Sam Hinkie type, you know, trust the process kind of thing, because that's the kind of overhaul that New Orleans needs. And most significantly, they need somebody who understands how to build assets through the draft. I think that's what I would be looking for from any prospective general manager candidate that I could hire for the Pelicans. That ability to put quality talent on a roster through the draft. And I mean, of course, that's not just the GM. That is the entire scouting department. That's the entire front office in terms of how they're doing their drafting and how they're doing their scouting. But I think the GM is the head of that snake.
Yeah, obviously the GM is the one who gives all of those scouts and player development people jobs at the end of the day. And what was I going to say? Crap. I guess that obviously player development and keeping a cost-effective roster is going to be one of the key focuses of the Pelicans, because they don't live in a big market. And I mean, there have been whispers that they would be one of the teams that are being considered for a move to Seattle whenever that Seattle arena is ready. And you sort of have to wonder what their future in New Orleans looks like. But I mean, until we get news of that, we cannot say for sure whether they're going to move. Obviously, following the Brooklyn Nets model would be good for the Pelicans, right, Vikram?
Absolutely. Oh yeah, I think the Brooklyn Nets are a model franchise kind of rebuilding process to look at. I think the Sixers are a pretty decent blueprint too, although I don't know. I don't know that that's as accurate for them, especially because I don't think they can go through that many years of losing without the franchise actually moving at this point. So I mean, they have to be very cognizant of that fact too, and I think that's going to be, that actually may be an overarching concern for a lot of these manager a lot of the decision making process for this particular instance, because they are pretty close to, you know, wanting to leave. And if you're already one of the lowest teams in attendance, if you can't even put a good product on the floor, I would be very concerned about your ability to stay in New Orleans. Now, that's not to say that Gail Benson has said anything about selling the franchise, but you can only take so much insofar as like losing and not putting together a convincing product. So,
and that's why this upcoming Anthony Davis trade is very important. What kind of jump start are the Pelicans going to get in this trade towards building a good team? Obviously, the year after, I mean, the season after an Anthony Davis trade, probably not going to put a very good team on the floor. But in the coming years, are you getting pieces that you can develop, that you can possibly make stars or rotation players out of and build a team out in that way? We'll see what happens. But again, Dell Demps has been fired, and it'll be interesting to see how the Pelicans operate moving forward. So with that, I wanted to bring up our next topic. The Boston Celtics played the Philadelphia 76ers this week in what is supposed to be maybe a playoff preview. Who knows? We do not know how the seedings are going to be in the Eastern Conference, especially in the top four. But the Celtics also played without Kyrie Irving, who I believe he sprained his knee. And they're going to take time for him to come back, obviously. You want him to be 100% healthy for the playoffs, but the Celtics won that game, and I did not watch the game, so I'm going to let Vikram take over this segment and talk about it for a little bit and why it is important for why it is an important outcome to talk about. So Vikram, take it away.
So the main reason we want to talk about this particular outcome is because, first of all, the Celtics won. And that's important because, you know, there's a lot of ado about nothing about how the Celtics were falling apart. They had all these issues, blah, 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 blah. And then there are a lot of storylines about, oh, how the new look Sixers with Tobias Harris look so good and all this type of stuff. So first of all, it did a very good job of reversing storylines, and that's important. But secondly, there are a couple considerations from the Celtics side. First, Philadelphia is going to have to change up their offense because posting up Joel Embiid against Al Horford is not working. For whatever reason, well, it's mostly because Al Horford is an incredibly smart defender, but Joel Embiid being unable to score productively out of the post against Al Horford is absolutely killing the 76ers offense. So in order for the 76ers to be more successful against a team like Boston in the playoffs and other teams as well who have post defenders like Marc Gasol for Toronto, he's going to have to run some pick and roll. And that's one thing that the 76ers don't do. But they happen to have three players on their roster, in their starting lineup, in Tobias Harris, Jimmy Butler, and Ben Simmons, that are all maestros at running the pick and roll. So for whatever reason, they don't run a lot of pick and roll. They really, really need to incorporate that set into their offense just to give the Celtics or any other team some trouble and get some switches so that Joel Embiid can post up against like a Jason Tatum instead of an Al Horford. So that's the first big takeaway I had from like an offensive execution standpoint. The other thing I had on the Celtics side was Gordon Hayward looked fantastic. And the last three games that he's played in, he's looked really, really good. So that's another thing that we have to actually look at. If he can round out to form and get closer to the Utah Gordon Hayward that we expected him to be before his injury, the Celtics are going to be a hard team to stop. And the last overarching theme that I wanted to say is there's a storyline now going around whether or not the Celtics are better without Kyrie Irving. I think that storyline is problematic. One, it doesn't endear the franchise to Kyrie Irving, and he's more likely to leave because of that type of talk, right? The other thing that I would say is that what a lot of people are misinterpreting in this case is that Kyrie Irving may take you out of your offensive sets, and that's totally true because he's an isolation player. But at the end of the playoffs and at the end of the game, and when you need a clutch scorer, Kyrie Irving is one of the few proven clutch scorers in this league. And so I don't necessarily buy into that storyline. But even still, it was a very impressive win for the Celtics. And for me, it showed me on the Sixers side a couple of major flaws they have in their offense. And the other thing is I don't think that they can play Boban in that matchup. He was cooked by Al Horford.
Right. And last week, I think we talked about the big four teams in the East. That is Toronto, Milwaukee, Boston, and God, name is escaping me. Toronto, Milwaukee, Boston, and Philadelphia, right?
Yep.
And we talked about how when Kyrie Irving is playing those teams, he's not necessarily the best player on the floor, especially when you're playing starting lineup versus starting lineup. And I agree with that. But Kyrie Irving is probably the best closer on the floor. And when the game is close and you give the ball to Kyrie Irving, his eyes just like open up, and he's going to score more often than not. We've seen this time and time again during the regular season with games against the Raptors, where the Raptors have had no answer for Kyrie Irving scoring. And it really helped the Celtics win those types of games. So Kyrie, having a guy like Kyrie is going to be useful come playoff time. But I wanted to go back to what you said earlier about running pick and roll with Joel Embiid. Tobias Harris has only been on the team for a week now. And I think it would be really smart for Brett Brown, coach of the 76ers, to employ the pick and roll with Tobias Harris because he's a shooter, and you cannot reliably go under the screen with him. You can try to go over, and he might drive right past you, and you have a free dunk for Joel Embiid. You try to go under, and he has a jump shot there. So I would like to see what they do with Tobias Harris handling the ball going forward. The problem is that if you make Tobias Harris handle the ball too much, that is taking touches away from Jimmy Butler and Ben Simmons. And as you stated last week, they're not very good off the ball.
So I think the better idea is almost using Tobias Harris as the screener. Can you imagine a Ben Simmons, Tobias Harris pick and roll or pick and pop? Like, that's the type of innovative thinking that, well, it's not really all that innovative, but I mean, that's the type of thinking and offensive strategy I think Brett Brown has to employ in addition to their normal sets. So I think that's what you, what we've really got to consider and see from this offense right now.
And I know that we said last week that we thought that the Celtics were the fourth best team in the East. Has your opinion changed much since then?
No, because I don't think that they could do this night in, night out. And I mean.
It's only been a week.
Yeah, I think like that's the biggest thing. Like, yes, they had a really impressive win, and I'm happy that it makes the game more entertaining, certainly, and it makes the playoff. I mean, we were already saying how the second round of the East was going to be an absolute slugfest. You know, this week has only reinforced that thinking. But you know, even with you know with that being said, I think there's just a lot of volatility so far. And the other thing I want to wait for is the buyout market to see what these teams and their final forms look like. To see any sort of assets that could potentially make a difference in the playoffs. I'm not predicting that there are any, you know, real game changers or difference makers there, but who knows, maybe they can find one.
And just a point I wanted to make, just because we say that Boston is the fourth best team in the East doesn't mean we're saying they suck. They did not suck, and they are part of the reason why from the Eastern Conference semifinals onwards, this is going to be, as Vikram said, a slugfest. Boston is very much a part of that slugfest, and there are going to be some very hard-fought series. I mean, Boston, I wouldn't count them out by any stretch. They're a part of the Big Four in the East. They're not like, you know, the fourth wheel. Vikram?
Yeah, I 100% agree. It, just because we say, you know, in the ranking of all four of these teams that they're fourth, you know, that's not to say that they couldn't win or not make it to the NBA Finals. I think that's the biggest thing that we have to continue to remind our viewers, or our listeners in this case, is that all of these teams have a pretty decent shot of making it to the NBA Finals. I just prefer Milwaukee or Toronto's chances slightly over the Celtics. That's basically where I'm at right now. But that's not to say that the Celtics can't heat up and go on a run and win these series. The thing is, depending on their seeding, they're going to have two or three really tough first-round matchups, and I think that's going to be something that'll be difficult for them to overcome. That's one thing that I do think seeding is going to matter for them for.
And I mean, watch out for Indy. I mean, they since Victor Oladipo went down, they were struggling for a little bit, but then they reeled off a series of consecutive wins. They're still in that third seed. So, it's probably not going to stay that way, but I mean, they are the kind of team that could mess up seeding, in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing I'll say about the Pacers is that, their remaining schedule is absolutely bonkers. They have one of the toughest schedules remaining in the league. And a bunch of road games coming up, so it's very likely they end up dropping to the fourth or fifth spot. But you know, even with that, I think what they've done post Oladipo is pretty amazing.
Yeah, and obviously that is something to look for as we move forward and see what the Pacers look like post All-Star break. So let's go on to our next topic. I wanted to talk about Magic Johnson and. His interviews with the media, they're always very interesting. I don't know if the media baits him into it or he just feels like saying it, but Magic Johnson had a couple of interesting interviews in a row with the media. In the first interview, he basically said that the Pelicans were not negotiating in good faith. And obviously, it depends on your perspective whether you disagree or agree with that. He has every right to say it. But then in an interview before they played the 76ers, Magic Johnson came out and said that Ben Simmons wanted to get some big guard advice from him over the summer. And they were going through some, obviously, since Magic Johnson works for the Lakers, they were going through some permissions with the Sixers to see whether they can get Ben Simmons to talk with Magic Johnson over the summer. Turns out that Elton Brand had already told the Lakers that he would not let Ben Simmons talk with Magic Johnson. And this happened over a month ago. And Magic Johnson did not mention that in the interview. It felt that Magic Johnson was asking nicely again whether he could talk with Ben Simmons. So this is brings up a very interesting thing. And oh yeah, the NBA started investigating tampering allegations with regards to this. And Magic Johnson, I mean, he got in a little trouble again. He did not get fined this time. So I guess that's a relief for the pocketbooks. But Vikram, why does Magic Johnson always feel the need to discuss other players with the media when he clearly doesn't have to?
So I think you're asking the question a little wrong here.
How am I asking it wrong?
And the reason I say that is I think you're right in the sense that like Magic Johnson would be smarter about how he says things in general. Like that's totally true. I think where I come down on this is if you're going to – if as the NBA, you're going to talk about tampering, you better apply the rule to everybody. I feel like Magic Johnson and the Lakers have gotten a real unfair shake in terms of how they're being treated with all this type of – all this type of news and business and all that type of stuff. That's not to say that they're not tampering, but my problem is when a free agent gets signed at 12:01 on the day that free agency opens, how the hell do you think that happened? That happened because they were having some negotiations beforehand, which theoretically is not supposed to be happening. And that's the whole reason we're not supposed to tamper. So my problem is with the NBA as a whole. Like, if you're going to call this tampering, you better call a spade and try to crack down on tampering across the league. Because that's not, I mean, that's my problem with this whole story.
I want to stop you right there because the Bucks owner, Mark Lasry, actually got fined $25,000 for violating tampering rules. Basically, what he said was that we hope it would be players like Anthony Davis and others who want to come to Milwaukee. Now, I don't see anything wrong with that. But apparently the NBA went ahead and fined Mark Lasry for tampering, apparently. So I guess what I'm trying to say is the NBA treating the Lakers fairly in these tampering rulings?
So, I mean, in this particular instance, I believe the ruling was that there was no tampering, which I think is actually the correct decision here.
Right.
Especially since these parties didn't talk.
Right,
and
they never
therefore,
talked. Yeah.
I'm not sure how you can tamper if there was no conversation.
Right.
And I do have a problem with, like, the idea that you go on Jimmy Fallon and have a wink, wink, nudge, nod about, like, it's completely unnecessary from the Magic Johnson perspective. And I understand that the whole point of bringing in Magic Johnson is as a recruiting tool. And I don't think that the tampering fine of $25,000 or $50,000 really bothers the Lakers franchise at all. So, I mean, from that perspective, I mean, if you want to stop tampering, you can start by increasing the fine amounts, because I think it's kind of ridiculous that you fine a dude $25,000 and he's probably like, well, thanks. It's not really that big of a deal for me or for the franchise. As far as them being treated unfairly or fairly, I think the parts where they've been caught tampering or where they've been fined for tampering are pretty legit. I just don't think that rule gets applied across the board, and I have some problem with that, especially with the free agency type stuff where teams somehow come to these agreements that they shouldn't know about. And the reason that it's important to think about is the Knicks are a good example of this. Do we really think that the Knicks made their blockbuster Porzingis trade and emptied the cap and all that stuff if they didn't already know that people were coming? Now, there's a totally reasonable argument to say the Knicks are a franchise that's been mismanaged for so long, they're just hoping. But I think that one of the problems they're going to run into if and when they do sign somebody like a Kyrie Irving is that, well, how did they know to make the trade beforehand? Isn't that tampering? And that's the kind of question I would ask about tampering with regards to the entire league.
Yeah, and the tampering rules are very ambiguous in the sense that teams cannot talk to players, but players can talk to players, and players can talk to agents who can talk to other players, right? So the medium of communication does very much exist. Obviously, as long as that medium of communication exists, tampering is going to happen, and players are going to get to know what other players are thinking through that. Right, Vikram?
I mean, does social media not exist? Does the internet not exist? I mean, what are we planning on doing? Taking everybody's cell phones and looking at their conversations? I think as far as rules that the CBA has put in, this is a page that deserves to be like thrown out. I just don't think it's a productive rule. And I mean, I even think the idea that, you know, players can say, I'd love to play with Anthony Davis, I'd love to play with LeBron James and not get fined. But then if some dude affiliated with the franchise says, yeah, it would be great if we had Anthony Davis, like, what, I mean, and then gets fined for that, is that not okay? I think the entire idea of tampering is nonsensical. I mean, that brings us to a even bigger conversation just in general about, you know, have Supermax contracts made a difference and yada, 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 and how do we maintain equity in the league, and how do we maintain a talent pool for every team? And, you know, that's a much longer conversation. But as far as this specific instance with the Magic Johnson tampering thing, I just think it's kind of ridiculous, to be honest.
And it's sort of analogous to the players, like say, resting players, shutting down players rule. It's really hard to enforce because all the team has to say is that, oh, we're resting him because of this injury that happened in practice, and you don't really know what happened. You can't really go and investigate that too much, right? So, I mean, it's something that's really ambiguous and probably something, as you said, that could be thrown out in the future. Would definitely, you know, save the league some headaches. In a way. So with that, we move on to the next topic is buyout destinations for these players. So obviously the trade deadline happened and a lot of players got bought out, and some of these players have found new homes. Specifically, we've already talked about Wes Matthews going to the Pacers, Wayne Ellington going to the Pistons. But this week, a couple of very significant buyout signings were made, especially Jeremy Lin going to the Raptors, Markieff Morris going to the Thunder, and Enes Kanter going to the Blazers. Vikram, what was your favorite buyout signing from this week?
I like the this is a kind of hard one. I actually liked Enes Kanter going to the Trailblazers, which I think is going to have it has an underrated impact on that team.
I like it too because, listen, Enes Kanter coming off the bench against backup bigs is one of the best things in the league. In fact, when he was coming off the bench for the Knicks, that's when he was putting up big numbers and actually making a difference on the team.
Well, I think this is going to, it has two effects. One, Enes Kanter himself is a pretty good player and gives them a source of offense against weaker second units. I think he's going to absolutely destroy second unit centers, especially a lot of second units that don't have great size. He's going to be fantastic. The next thing that I like about it is it forces Zach Collins to play better. And if he plays like he played against the Warriors with all those hustle plays, then the midseason pickup is just as impactful in terms of motivating him to go even harder. So I think from an organizational perspective, it's a complete and total win-win. And I do think that the Portland team does struggle with offense when Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum are off the floor. And it's nice to have another scorer where you can just throw him the ball and he'll create offense out the post. So I think that's going to be fantastic for them.
Right. And Enes Kanter, I also thought he was probably going to be the most impactful signing as well, just because of what you said. You don't have to start him. He comes off the bench, and as part of that second unit, he's almost unstoppable on the glass, really. And, a guy who can get you extra possessions, can create on offense, run the pick and roll. That's some of the things you want in your second unit. And now that the Blazers are getting it, they really improved their second unit over the past couple of days, adding Rodney Hood. And obviously, you hope that the players that are already on their roster continue to improve, but also adding Enes Kanter should have a positive effect as well. I thought Jeremy Lin to the Raptors was also a really interesting move, just because Fred VanVleet, had surgery, and he's sort of a veteran leader. That Jeremy Lin, when you give him limited minutes, he is the kind of guy who can stay healthy and be a great point guard. We saw it with during his first game, I believe it was against the Nets or the Wizards, but he played really well and he meshed in right away.
Yeah, just completely unsurprising, right? Jeremy Lin is a consummate professional, you know, from locally up to us, so that's nice too.
Yeah,
it's always nice to see a local guy.
Palo Alto High School.
Yeah, local guy. Excel at the NBA level. But I think the biggest thing for me in terms of this particular free agent signing is the Raptors really needed guard depth in a bad way, especially with with Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet being kind of injury risks, especially like with Fred VanVleet out. That's one thing. And the other thing that they did was they got rid of Norman Powell, right, in the trade. And so that
not Norman Powell, DeLon Wright.
Sorry, DeLon Wright. Excuse me. What was I saying?
Yeah,
but they got rid of DeLon Wright, so they lost some of their point guard depth. And so bringing in another point guard, one who is as capable as Jeremy Lin, is a complete and total win for the organization. And with Fred VanVleet out, they need him. He looked good in his first game, actually. I would say the Raptors' pickups during the season with Jeremy Lin, Pat McCaw, and Marc Gasol, I think are going to have some really good dividends.
Don't remind me about Pat McCaw. My God, he's actually playing well.
This actually brings up an interesting point about what Marc Gasol is doing for the Raptors. He gives them a completely new dimension in their offense because he's able to run the offense from the high elbows. And what he was doing was he was catching the ball at the elbows. And Pat McCaw, apparently because he was in the Warrior system for forever and this is what they do, he would cut off that and get the ball from Gasol and actually be able to make something out of that. And this is not a plan to play in the Raptors offense. It's not part of what Nick Nurse designed. But because these two guys have that skill set, they're able to pull that off on the fly. So I think if that gets incorporated into the Raptors offense, it's going to look really, really cool in the future. And I think it's going to be a valuable dimension of offense in the playoffs too. So we'll see. But I think Jeremy Lin was a great pickup for the Raptors. I just don't know. While I think he's a good fit for that team and they need point guard depth, I'm not sure how much he's going to play in the playoffs.
I mean, that's going to be interesting, right? I mean, at that point, you're looking for matchup plays. Your rotation shortens up. So maybe instead of playing 10 players, you're playing 7 players or 8 players. And whether Jeremy Lin is a part of those 8 players basically depends on matchups, depends on how he's playing at the time. So we'll see. Markieff Morris, he was another highly sought-after buyout candidate. He goes to the Thunder, and we talk about these four men who can space the floor. Markieff Morris is another one of these guys. And the Morris twins, really, they have made an imprint on the NBA, like, as really good role players. We see Marcus Morris with the Celtics. Markieff is a very similar player. And obviously, it's a good addition for the Thunder, especially if Markieff Morris can have these injury issues behind him by the time the playoffs come around. He's a good bench piece.
Yeah, I definitely think that they need shooting in the worst possible way, and this can only be a positive with regards to that. So I think he's a good pickup for them. I'm surprised more players don't want to like play for the Warriors or something, to be honest, or even like the Rockets, because they have time. So it's kind of interesting. Like, I actually understand why Wes Matthews went to the Pacers. He's going to get a starting role and play a really big role for that team, especially when he's looking for his next contract. I think that that's pretty significant for him.
And same with Wayne Ellington. I think players have watched the Warriors over the years, and they like to tinker with their rotations a lot, and it's not a guarantee whether you're going to get playing time or not. It depends how well you're playing, what the matchup is like. Steve Kerr likes to tinker with lineups like none other. And I think players have sort of caught on to that and are saying that if I'm a buyout candidate, I'm pretty much playing for my next contract. And do I really want to be playing for my next contract while I'm on the Warriors? That is something to look for. And plus, you have to look at like whether the player is older, on the other side of his prime and has not won a championship yet. Those are the kind of guys that the Warriors go after and sign, end up signing rather, not the kind of players that are looking for their next contract.
That's true. I mean, while I agree with you in theory, I think somebody like a Wes Matthews would have played like 20 minutes a game for Golden State.
Yeah, like there are games where Wes Matthews could have played 20 minutes a game, but there would probably be other matchups where Wes Matthews probably wouldn't have played at all.
It
wouldn't be a surprise. Right.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I understand why he did it, and actually, I'm kind of in agreement with him on that. I think you've got to, you know, you got to get what you can when you can.
Yeah, and like you look at the other buyout candidates that are still on the market, Marcin Gortat, he wanted to sign with the Warriors, but the Warriors are like, hold up, man. We want to see how the buyout market develops, and we'll get back to you. I see Gortat as a guy who is on his last legs. Maybe will not help any team that signs him, depending on the matchup and everything, but we'll see about that. Pau Gasol, he's interesting because it's a possibility that he gets bought out. He's disappointed with his role in the Spurs and asked for a trade, actually, during the deadline. Obviously, it's hard to trade a guy like Pau Gasol at his age, but he's an interesting guy to watch out for.
Yeah, his contract. That's probably the big thing.
Yeah, but so he's interesting.
I'd say on that role, I would say like a Robin Lopez is probably a superior player to all of those guys, to be
right.
honest.
Right, and he's in an interesting situation right now because he was supposed to get bought out, but what ended up happening is that the Bulls traded Bobby Portis, and they are so out of depth at the center position right now that Robin Lopez is actually playing significant minutes. I think he played 32 minutes in his last game before the All-Star break. So right now they're saying he may or may not get bought out, and it's going to be called before March 1st whether he gets bought out or not.
If they want to tank, they better buy him out.
Yeah, and obviously, I mean,
Robin Lopez playing 32 minutes is going to win you some games.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, obviously, that's a guy that the Warriors are interested in. There's mutual interest there. So
yeah, I think again, I'm not really sure that the Warriors need another big. Like if they could get another wing instead of a big, I think that would be preferable for them. But there's not exactly a plethora of those types of players out there. Who's the best on the market now? Like a Carmelo Anthony, if he's even a wing, or like an Alex Abrines?
Alex Abrines.
Is that really what we're down to now?
Right. And he's not the best player, but it sort of shocked me that when he got waived.
That's a little surprising. I'm not sure what the deal was there.
Yeah, I mean, I do not watch much Thunder basketball, so maybe a Thunder fan can enlighten me on that. But that shocked me.
I mean, he doesn't play great, so I mean, that's probably the big thing. Or I'm not sure if they needed to create a roster spot for the signing of Markieff Morris.
Maybe that was part of it. But another guy. So other guys that are on the buyout market. Obviously, you mentioned Robin Lopez. Ben McLemore is also on the buyout market. Milos Teodosic, and also Omri Kasspi. So obviously, the list is going to grow as we move past the All-Star break, and teams are going to have to make some last-minute decisions as to whether they will buy out their guy so they can go and play for other teams. So this is definitely a developing situation, and we'll see how it goes. So with that, we're going to go on to our next topic, sort of a lighthearted topic. We're going to talk about the All-Star Saturday night competitions and sort of debate who's going to win those. So are you ready, Vikram?
Oh, yeah, bring it on.
All right. So first thing we're going to talk about is the three-point shootout. So there are a lot of players playing in the three-point shootout this year. The Curry brothers, Seth and Steph Curry. Along with Dirk Nowitzki, Buddy Hield, Damian Lillard, Chris Middleton, Kemba Walker, Danny Green, Devin Booker, and Joe Harris. So a lot of names there, a lot of participants. Probably going to take a long time for that competition to take place. Who's your favorite?
You know who I'd actually really like? Really, really like to win this?
Who?
I would have loved for Del Curry to be participating too.
Oh yeah, they are saying that might be a possibility.
I don't actually think that's going to happen.
Yeah.
It would be crazy if it actually did.
That'd be awesome.
I think that would be freaking awesome. And if he beat everybody else out as a former NBA player, I would be over the moon. For the record, we should say that Kyle Kuzma won the MVP of the Rising Stars Challenge.
Oh, yes. Unsurprising. Yeah, Team USA versus Team World. USA pulled out the W there. So Kyle Kuzma won the MVP there. So good for him.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is one of those things where, you know, we go back to the whole Pelicans trade thing, not to go too much on a tangent here, but there is talent there. I mean, like, seriously, I just think the Pelicans are going to come to regret it. But that's okay. We'll go back to the All-Star festivities. So my actual answer for the three-point shootout is I think I like what I really kind of want Seth to beat Steph too, so I'm gonna go with Seth Curry.
Oh, you're gonna go with Seth? Okay.
Yep, not Steph.
Well,
I think it's gonna. He's motivated.
And in an interesting bit of gossip news, Seth Curry got engaged to Doc Rivers' daughter yesterday.
Oh, really?
On Valentine's Day. So that's an interesting family dynamic there.
Jeez, what is up with all these basketball families or basketball players getting, you know, married and stuff? It's interesting.
I mean, yeah, the Curry family has got like a lot of basketball influence in there. But anyways, I mean, besides the point, I actually like Buddy Hield.
He's going to be a good he's going to have fun. Yeah. The other dark horse candidate I'd go with is Joe Harris.
Joe Harris. I love
Joe I think Harris. He's like if I could root for an underdog type of thing, Joe Harris is absolutely.
Yeah. I like Joe Harris too as a sort of a competitor here. I look at the top competitors here as maybe Steph Curry, Seth Curry, Buddy Hield, Joe Harris, and maybe if he's having a good day, Damian Lillard. These are my top five candidates to win the game. I like Buddy Hield because he's got a quick release and he's shot a lot of those spot up threes in the actual game. So he has a lot of in-game experience with that. So that's why I like Buddy Hield. But anyways, I mean, it's a debate that can go on and on, especially with the number of competitors that there are. And is Dirk Nowitzki going to complete the round in 60 seconds?
I honestly don't think he's even going to complete it.
Oh, God. Dear Lord. Okay, well.
Again, I'm rooting for him, too, as another one of those, like, if he can, oh, my God, it would be awesome.
Yeah, it would be pretty awesome. And with that, we move on to the skills challenge. So I think they're going to be doing it the same way they've been doing it for a couple of years now. You would have the bigs in one bracket and the guards in another bracket, and you would have a guard going against a big in the final round. So the participants are Luka Doncic, Trae Young, De'Aaron Fox, and Mike Conley for the guards. And for the bigs, you have Nikola Jokic, Jason Tatum, Kyle Kuzma, and Nikola Vucevic. So, Vikram, who's your favorite?
Who are the bigs again? Sorry.
The bigs were Jokic, Tatum, Kuzma, Vucevic.
Yeah, I guess Tatum is a big in this case. I really want to watch Nikola Jokic just do some fun stuff.
Oh yeah, I mean he's been in the skills challenge for some time now. I mean he's known as a skillful big.
He is the best passing big man in NBA history.
NBA history.
I don't think that's a stretch.
I don't think that's a stretch either. But yeah, I mean that's pretty significant. But now that you brought it up, I like Luka. I like Luka in this guy. I think he doesn't like Luka. Yeah, I think he has a chance to be perfect. I mean the bounce pass, chest pass. I mean obviously, I mean there are times where the best skills players they mess up on one pass and then oh my God they're done. But I like Luka if everything goes right. I mean he's the guy that. Can get through the entire crash course rather pretty perfectly.
Yeah, I like De'Aaron Fox too because he's so just fast.
Yeah, but that last 3-point shot, right? That's where I doubt him a little bit.
He's not that bad.
He's not that bad. But like if he's going against Luka and Luka's like trailing on a three and he's De'Aaron Fox is on a second three, that's the sort of thing where I can see De'Aaron Fox losing.
Yeah, but I wouldn't be too worried about that, man.
Okay. Trae Young is also in it. All these names are interesting. I don't see Kyle Kuzma. I don't know how Kyle Kuzma is going to do.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. I think he's going to do great, though, honestly.
In the skills challenge?
Yeah, why not, man?
I thought he would have been pretty good in a 3-point shootout.
Dude, he's shooting like 30% this year.
Really?
You just remember his makes more than his misses.
of course, yeah. Obviously, I don't watch as much Lakers basketball as I should, but Kuzma has always looked to me as a sharpshooter, not really a passer. Especially his box scores, sort of.
Know, like from the ball handling, dribbling perspective, I'm not quite sure that you know that this makes sense. But hey, what do I know, right?
Right. I mean, you got to put him in somewhere, I guess. And I'd probably like to see Lonzo Ball healthy for this, just to see what he could do. But anyways. Yeah.
Anyway, that's fortunate.
So we move on to, I guess, the big event, the slam dunk contest. And for the slam dunk contest, we only have four guys this year. So it's going to be Dennis Smith Jr., Miles Bridges, he's a rookie for the Charlotte Hornets. Hamidou Diallo, he's a rookie for the OKC Thunder. And John Collins, he's a second-year guy for the Hawks. So, Vikram, obviously this is the main event. Who do you like?
I got to take the favorite. I think Dennis Smith Jr. Dennis Smith Jr. had one of the sickest dunks I've ever seen last year. And he's definitely the favorite as far as things go this year, and for good reason.
Yeah, and another thing, point I want to bring up, John Collins, he had a very good audition today while he was playing for Team USA in that Rising Stars game. But I like Miles Bridges, dude. I look at it this way. Your success in the slam dunk contest is going to be contingent upon how much time can you spend in the air, and because that's where you do most of your tricks, that's where you get most of your style points from. How much time can you spend in the air? And I have not seen a guy spend as much time in the air as I've seen Miles Bridges.
I will say then definitely don't sleep on Hamidou Diallo.
Oh man, he's also a high flyer, isn't he?
Oh my god, the dude. So, you know, he lost you know who he lost the dunk contest to in high school?
Who?
Zion. That's who he lost to.
Oh, my God.
He's so much fun.
My God. Yeah.
I'm telling you, Hamidou Diallo is going to be so much fun to watch, too, in this. Like, don't sleep on these guys, bro. It's going to be a very, very, very fun dunk contest, I think.
Oh, yeah. I totally agree. These are probably the four best guys you could probably have. And good for Miles Bridges getting in the contest as a hometown guy.
Yeah, I really, really like the Miles Bridges pick. Right, pick, I guess. It's not really a pick per se, but I think it's nice to see him get some recognition for what he's accomplished.
Who's the guy who's not on this list who you would have loved to see in a slam dunk contest?
Dude, I wish Vince Carter would have done it.
Oh, man. Yeah.
I wonder what he's got left, bro. But he threw on a sick windmill in warm-ups the other day. Oh, so I imagine he's still got something left.
He's still got something left, but like I've heard a story like Vince Carter could probably throw down dunks in his sleep when he was a younger guy. Obviously, I mean with this you got to go like round 1, then round 2, then round 3. You wonder what kind of toll that would take on him. Who would I want to see? Oh dear. There are some names that popped out for me personally. God. It's not coming to my mind. I would want to see Giannis.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Giannis is he's a real power dunker. I'm not sure how well that would work out in the dunk contest. But that's not to say that I don't think it would be exciting.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, you bring up a good point there.
I actually kind of I have the same worry about John Collins as well for the dunk contest, is that he's going to be throwing down a lot of power dunks, and those just don't necessarily look as flashy as what a Dennis Smith Jr. is going to look like with his crazy vertical.
Yeah, it was sort of like Harrison Barnes in the dunk contest back in the day, right? It was a lot of power dunks that look good in a game, but not in a dunk contest.
Right. That don't look great in a dunk contest. Exactly. Mm-hmm. I'm 100% with you on that. I mean, we could both be wrong. It could be, you know, quite entertaining.
Right. And those are the four competitions that are going to happen. I'm NBA All-Star Saturday night. It's in my opinion, the best part of the All-Star game. Okay. The game is sort of to me personally. I love to watch Saturday night. I mean, that's where the entertainment is at. So with that, Sunday night, All-Star game. Who you got? Team LeBron? Team Tampering, sorry. Or Team Giannis?
Team Tampering. I like that one.
Oh, I had to bring it up.
Yeah, man, why not? I think it's still funny.
Right. I think LeBron has the better team here.
Yeah, I don't even think it's close. Having the first pick is like really kind of brutal.
Yeah, it is, because you get to pick KD, right? And especially if you're LeBron. Right, you're LeBron, you get to pick KD. I think that's going to happen for a couple of years. LeBron's going to be the top vote getter, and he's going to get to pick his starter, and he's probably going to get KD on his team every year. That's going to get. Also, Giannis was picking first for the reserves, and he picked Chris Middleton first That also sort of messed it up for him because
yeah,
then,
but you gotta have loyalty.
You gotta have loyalty, and you gotta put your guy on the team. That's more important than anything else. But
yeah.
you're having fun at the end of the day, and you don't want unnecessary conflict to brew out of the game. Bradley Beal got picked last, by the way, for guys who are interested in that kind of stuff. But
well, that's the thing, because Middleton got picked so much earlier. I think a cogent argument could be made that like that wouldn't have actually happened in a perfect world.
I thought I would have anticipated LaMarcus Aldridge getting picked last, like he was rumored to be picked last year.
Well, that would have made sense too.
Yeah, or Kyle Lowry, but that was funny from Giannis. Like Giannis was like, Kyle Lowry did not want to get picked last, so I'm picking Kyle Lowry. I was like, eh, okay. But anyways, with that is our episode for this week. So for a week after the trade deadline, we had quite a bit of content, Vikram.
Yes, yeah, surprisingly, right? Not really that surprising, honestly.
And like next week, we should see how the buyout market takes shape, and what guys are getting waived before the March 1st deadline, and where they're gonna sign with teams, and we'll get you ready for the playoff push, hopefully we got some more juicy storylines for you as the season winds down. So with that, for Vikram, I'm Guru. We'll see you guys soon.